up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wake up!
And a good Wednesday morning to you. It is SB Nation Radio Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver. So, again, we say it all the time, how the sports world is being reshaped and is trying to be salvaged. We talked earlier about baseball. Another proposal. It feels like there's five or six of them, and they seem to come out almost every day, that there is a new proposal for this organization to come back and this organization to come back. Now, as you see restrictions being lifted around the country, there are sports that can take advantage of that. If you're the PGA Tour, it is time to start. If you want to start coming back, start looking at places in states, for example, that are going to be starting to relax a little bit of their quarantine, and then figure out, do you have a tournament there? Did you play a tournament there? Can you move the date? Is there a possibility? NASCAR is doing the exact same thing. The governor of North Carolina said that the Coca-Cola 600, which is one of their biggest races on the calendar, it's the longest race they run. It's part of Memorial Day weekend. And nationally, it goes right on with the Indianapolis 500. It's kind of a full day of racing. It's the Sunday of that three-day weekend. So you get the Indy 500 and right after that, the Coca-Cola 600. Well, the Indy 500 has moved to the fall. They're not going to be racing, but the Coca-Cola 600 can, it, as long as, again, social distancing regulations are followed by drivers and crews. And I don't know how crews will do it. They got to be crammed in a pit stall trying to put tires on a vehicle, but there'll be no fans in the stands and they can still run this very important race. But at the same time that they're doing that, NASCAR has been looking at its schedule to say, look, our team headquarters, a lot of them are in North Carolina. Let's look at the schedule to try to say Bristol, Charlotte, Darlington, you know, race Atlanta, racetracks in the southeast, Martinsville, where it doesn't take a lot for teams to get there. There's not these long travels to out west to those racetracks. It's just one other sport that is looking at the dynamics of this and saying, let's give it a chance. Let's get it a shot. And NASCAR is doing their part.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Ron is at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. By the way, Roy Horn, Siegfried and Roy, he's got coronavirus. The Las Vegas act?
Got it from the tiger.
He was the one that got bit by the tiger like 20 years ago. Remember that?
Yep.
Remember that? I think he was the guy that got attacked by his white... You know how cool that was? Not cool that was for him, but he begged authorities not to put the tiger down. Because that's like the first thing they do.
See,
he's like,
I always
he's like
thought...
clutching his neck in agonizing pain. And the first thing he's thinking about is don't kill the tiger. Yeah. Do not put the tiger down.
I always looked upon those two as the true Tiger Kings.
That's true. That's right.
Because they've been messing That's with right. tigers a lot longer than anybody else has.
Yeah. Penn Jillette tells an interesting story about those guys, because he said when he was out in Vegas, doing his acts, and he got invited to an event, a Vegas, just an event where a bunch of Vegas acts were showing up for charity. And he goes, I show up and I'm in jeans and a T-shirt, just show up to this event. And he goes, and Siegfried and Roy came in their complete outfit, their complete, like they'd be on stage. And this was nothing more than sort of a meet and greet sort of charity event. He goes, but he woke up to the realization that they knew who they were. They knew that every time that they were out, they needed to be Siegfried and Roy. Whenever they were going to meet people and meet the public, they needed to be that. They were never going to be without the flash and the glamour and the hair and the makeup. And he said he took a little lesson from that, that they were real showmen, that they were the real showmen of Las Vegas. He always respected their act because it was good magic and they had tigers. Well, how could you not disagree with the tigers? So I hope, Roy, you get better, because, I don't know if their act is still around. I mean, I haven't been to Vegas in a long time, if they're still doing their thing or they're retired. But he's got coronavirus. It's kind of sad. All right, so we know that sports is reshaping because of the coronavirus. coronavirus, but it's also reshaping for things that have nothing to do with the coronavirus. And we're seeing this more and more in college basketball and at least in youth basketball, as players are now opting for, well, some players are opting for the G League because there's a lot of money to play minor league basketball at home. You don't have to go to France. You don't have to go to Greece. You don't have to go to, you know, China. You don't have to go to Australia. You can stay at home. You can be a kid out of high school and make six figures, a nice six-figure salary playing in the G League until it is time for you to go to the NBA. Who hates this? John Calipari. Why wouldn't he hate this? But he mentioned this on a podcast, and I got to give him some credit. He doesn't hate it for the same reasons you may think he hates it. Because initially when I saw that Calipari was against this kind of idea, I'm like, well, of course, right? He goes after these kids. He goes after the kind of kids that would go to the G League to make $300,000. He's competing with all the other major college basketball coaches for this level of talent. So naturally, he's against the G League pursuing top recruits out of high school. But here is what his reasoning behind it is. Now, I preface this by saying, I've never met or never listened to another college basketball coach that is as good of a salesman as John Calipari. There may be a few slightly better, but in my book, he's either the best or he's at least in the top three of guys that can spin anything. Right? He's just got that natural ability to do that. That's not good. It's not bad. It's just the way he's designed. He can spin anything. But here's what he said on a podcast with Charles Barkley about why he doesn't like this. Quote, "My issue with the G League trying to entice players by giving them more money is not the kids that you're going to get. It's the thousands of ninth and 10th graders that think that's how they're going to make it when you and I know it's going to be 2%. We're not talking 50. It'll be thousands and thousands and thousands. We spend all our time talking about the small percentage of guys who want to go to the NBA. I only concern myself with all the other guys, all the other young black men who go to college. I'm worried about the 99%. We've got to make sure that these young black kids get their education because that's going to dictate their future." He points out that at Kentucky, a player who plays at Kentucky receives a lifetime scholarship. This allows them to come back to Kentucky at any time in their life to get a degree, even if they leave school early for the NBA. Now, I'll be honest with you. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was on the table at Kentucky. And it might be on the table for all these other schools, too. I didn't know that aspect of it. I always thought that the guys who leave early for the NBA would just pay for it themselves. I want to go back to school. I'll just pay for it myself. But they can go back to Kentucky to receive this. He makes a very, very good point, because what he was saying is, look, if you're a ninth grader and you're really good at basketball, right, that you might be looking at the avenue for yourself is, well, I'll just go to the G League when I'm done high school. There's no need to get myself academically ready for college. And he says that's a problem. And I agree with him. This makes a lot of sense. Now, again, is Calipari spinning it in a way that sort of benefits him in terms of getting, you know, like trying to showcase to the elite recruits Kentucky's still a viable option? Possibly. But there is enough concern here about a lot of young people who have a good feeling about their basketball future that is not going to be sort of taken and processed and evaluated and polished up and shined in the college basketball world. Remember, nobody's kicking you. You know, no one's going to kick you out of Kentucky if you're an elite prospect. Calipari will keep you for 4 years if you want to stay 4 years. If you are a young player that does have pro ability, even if it's not in the NBA, listen, there's plenty of people who've made a very good living taking their talents out of college and playing overseas, playing in China, playing in Europe, playing in South America. You don't have to get NBA millions to be a professional basketball player. You can make good money being a professional basketball player for 10 years playing in Greece, playing in some other places. Right? It comes with a lot of caution. It comes with make sure you cash your check as quickly as possible. Some leagues are a little bit more viable than others, but you can still make a decent living doing it. If you're a ninth grade kid and you don't prepare yourself academically and you just think the G League will answer all of my prayers, what if that doesn't come to fruition? They're not taking everybody. And because they're not taking everybody, where does that leave a large group of potential college athletes where they could have worked on their academics enough to get into an institution, Kentucky or not, and get at least some semblance of a college education? This makes a lot of sense. This is a very well thought out argument as to why this is not necessarily a great thing. Now, look, all of this is going to change once athletes are able to make money while they're in school. When they can use their image and likeness to generate income, this sort of G League conversation is going to go by the wayside. There'll be still those who say, look, coach, college isn't for me. I know that you're going to give me easy classes. I know you can put me in a position to be in school and not stress out about advanced work. I can just play basketball, but I still don't want to go to college. It's just not for me. I just don't want that. I'm done with school. I want to play basketball as a pro. Thanks, but no thanks. There's going to be those type of players. There always will be. But once the pay for play, you know, sort of economic situation goes on with college hoops, then you're going to find the people that want to get out of high school and make money. College basketball becomes might become a better place for them to make some money. Depends. It depends on where you go. Depends what kind of name you are. You know, if you're Zion Williamson and you go to Duke, you know, who knows what the economics could have been, you know, while he was at Duke, where if he goes to Lexington, who knows what that would have been. But I don't know. I give John Calipari credit. I kind of rip on him a little bit. Again, he can be slick. He can be a good salesman selling something that doesn't make a lot of sense. But this does make a lot of sense. He does continue in the podcast talking to Charles Barkley. He said, look, people look at Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, LeBron, but they don't see the rest of the high school guys who came into the NBA are not physically, emotionally, or mentally ready to play in the NBA. I think that they should be going to college for 2 years. Look, again, Calipari has a vested interest in this. He is looking at this and saying, I do want to protect Kentucky basketball. And what I bring to Kentucky basketball is I bring McDonald's All-Americans. That's what I do. They come to the school, they stay 1 or 2 years, I turn over my roster all the time, but it's what I do, right? And so he does have a little bit of a vested interest in this. But it does make sense that you really do want to keep it college to be the option for kids while they're growing up, while they're being put in a period of their life where everybody is wanting a little piece of them in 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. Because they're so talented, they're the best in the region, they're the best in the state, and everybody's got a little piece of that kid. But maybe the best avenue to get to the NBA is to go to Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, whatever, and not necessarily the G League. However, I will say this. People talk about college basketball. If the G League opens itself up, and college basketball is going to get hurt because there's going to be all this talent that will just get paid in the G League rather than go to college basketball. And even if you're making money on the side doing car commercials, the G League could still set you up nicely as a pro. Do not, and I mean this, do not underestimate the power of college basketball. Do not underestimate the power of the NCAA tournament. That is a sexy draw for a lot of young college basketball players. It really is. That is one of the biggest sporting events we have in this country. Right, and it is up there too. I mean, it is right up there. It is a big deal on the calendar.
Now, it could change in 20 years.
It sure.
If everyone keeps going to the G League, I think that the tournament could lose some of its luster 25 years from now.
I don't think so.
I can see it.
I think if you have a bracketed tournament that people fill in, I think people are drawn to it. I don't think the athletes matter. I think the format matters.
No, I think you're never going to have problems filling the tournament. I'm saying the top talent may not show up because it might have lost some of its oomph because
yeah,
it's been
but again,
20, 25 years. Everyone's
right,
going to
so,
get paid.
But again, that's never going to go off. The NCAA tournament is never going to be off TV.
No, it's never going to go
never,
away.
And it's never going to go away. It lands at a perfect location on the sports calendar. We haven't reached the NBA playoffs yet. We have not reached, April has got so much fun. March is still in spring training. And so it fills this void, the sort of dead period of really, really important sports, it becomes the most important sport. It's on national, it's on every channel, it's on national TV. If you're a kid, look, you can make money playing at, in the G League, but nobody watches G League basketball games. I don't even know when they're on. Right? I don't know when they're on. And they're not playing in front of full arenas, and I don't care who you are. They're not selling out. You're taking buses. It's a real minor league. There's no flash and fun in the G League. It's a real grinded out minor league. You're just making more money, but it is not. It's not, you know, great. It's not glamorous and glitzy. You go play for Duke, it's glamorous and glitzy. You go play for Duke on national TV, it's glamorous and sexy. I mean, it's fun. I mean, you're playing in front of millions and millions of people on national television. And if you get to the NCAA tournament Final Four, that, I mean, there's no bigger stage to showcase who you are than the Final Four in the championship game. So even if the talent level is diminished, the hunger for that sport is still going to be enough to keep it on CBS, to keep Jim Nance from calling it. The flavor of it is going to be energizing. You're a 19-year-old playing in the G League is never going to play in front of 70,000 people in any game ever, no matter who he is. But you can play in front of 70,000 people at the Final Four. And that is an attraction. There are kids who are going to grow up who watch March Madness who say, look, I may only be in school for 1 year. But I want that. Like, I at least want that in my life. I don't want to play for, you know, the Birmingham Fire Ants and take a bus to Shreveport. Like, you know, that's the G League, where I could play for Duke, get a bag, you know, bag full of Nike swag and play in front of millions of people in 70,000 in the national title game and etch my legacy in the history of college basketball. I think there's always going to be a spot for that. Yes, talent-wise, I agree. I think there's a diminish once you have the best players leaving. But again, here's the other part of it. You don't know what you don't know, right? How many fans really are going to go, you know, I follow 7 or 8 high school guys, and they're not playing college basketball, so I'm not interested. Most people go, oh, look, it's Georgia Tech and Maryland in the Sweet 16. Most people can't name 2 people on both of those teams. They just watch it because in the calendar, it's one of the most important things on television. It's an Elite 8 game or whatever it is. So I still think it has got some attraction. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. That's coming up later on in this hour. Don't forget, we got that. And again, if you want to hit us up at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with 2 N's, as we continue along on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb, that's coming up in 10 minutes. You don't want to miss that. Always good on a Wednesday as we roll along. Next hour, Tony Bruno is going to join us. Can't wait to talk to him. Legendary sports talk talent. Got a big announcement for you on that one coming up next hour. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's. As we continue on a wake-up call. So, again, my props to John Calipari. But you know what else I liked about that? And I kind of glossed over it, that he was doing a podcast with Charles Barkley. Like, first of all, that's great, right? Anytime you get Charles Barkley and the salesman that is John Calipari together, that's podcasting gold. I mean, listen, Charles Barkley isn't one of the most honest people that you can get talking about certain situations.
Yeah, he is.
Like, and then John Calipari, like I said, he's a great salesman. He can take any issue and sort of spin it and make it his own. So those two together, that's going to be that's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be amazing. See, I bring this up because there was a player, Dacian Nix, who decommitted from UCLA to join the G League. Another player that was like, oh, I'm heading to college. No, I'm not. I'm going to go in this direction. And I'll be leaving for whatever team the G League puts him in. Now, listen, I remember when the G League started, early 2000, let's say 2000. And it was, look, when in the minor league basketball teams I was working for, the big deal is they were trying to create something where they could keep kids who couldn't play in the NBA or couldn't quite, you know, or maybe needed a little shining, a little bit more time, or were never going to make it, but just wanted to play basketball professionally, to keep them in the United States. There wasn't really a place to do it other than the CBA.
Quick question. Why was it called the D League?
Yeah, that
I
was
understand the G League because it's sponsored by Gatorade.
Yep, it was called the D League because it was called the Development League.
Development League.
That's right.
That's the D I was looking for. Not
and every one
else.
Of us on these minor league teams where no paychecks were coming in were begging to get jobs in the D League. And at and back then, the initial D-League was they were in the southeastern part of the United States. So they had a team in Asheville, North Carolina, and like Greenville, South Carolina. I think there was a team in Charleston. There was a team in Huntsville. So they had teams in the southeastern part of the United States with the plan of eventually expanding, which they did. But they've had teams come and go. But it was, again, it's an alternative because, look, even if you're a professional basketball player, playing overseas ain't easy. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's difficult. There was a kid who played at Kansas by the name of Paul Shirley. Got a little bit of trouble. He had some controversial comments recently, but he wrote a book called Can I Keep My Jersey? And it was a book that detailed his journey through professional basketball. And the reason he called the book Can I Keep My Jersey is because he had 100 jerseys. I mean, he played everywhere. He would get called up in the NBA for a 10-day contract and then go right back to Winnipeg to play in the, you know, whatever it was, the CBA or whatever the leagues were at the time. He played in our league, he played overseas in Spain. Some places he would go and they would give him this grand apartment and he'd be like, "Wow, this is incredible," because the team was super funded and it was popular and there was money. And they would say, "No, this is your living quarters. Welcome to Madrid." And he would play, you know, play for this local team for a while. Some places he was like, "I'm scrounging for food." Like, we didn't have any food. There was no post-game meal and it was awful. So he had this like complete journey. And the minor league system was always like, if you're an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid, do you want to be in Australia? Like, seriously? So that's where these ideas came from. The problem is that money was, you know, does a kid want to make 30 grand playing in America or 100 grand playing in Peru? Because he could. Like, it was some serious, like, we would lose players all the time. Like, agents would call our coaches and be like, "Yeah, we got an offer to play in New Zealand." And it was like three times the amount of money we were paying. Right. And that's the way it goes. There's a lot of basketball leagues around the world. We've got a lot of talented players here. And, you know, so we tried our best to keep them home. We didn't have the economics. Well, that's where the G League got smart, because they're partnering up with like Nike and Adidas and these companies to go, "Look, here's a high school kid that is absolutely heading to the NBA. He's got he's grading out all on the, his talent grade is through the roof. He doesn't need to go to Kentucky for 1 year before he's a first round draft pick. So why don't you get him now, Gatorade/Nike/, you know, Under Armour, wherever, like whoever it is. Why don't you grab him now? Get him into our league. He's a pro. We'll pay him big money. He doesn't have to boogie off to college for a year. And we give some viability to this development league that's important for us, because it gives NBA teams a chance to have players down and, you know, to send them down if they have to or whatnot. But it also, again, gives us, you know, it gives us a little bit of economic leverage to go, "We've got this kid. You know, if you're Nike, you can get this kid wrapped up. You don't have to wait until the second he was released from Mike Krzyzewski's grasp before you sign him and you take care of him." And that it seems to work. It will seem to work. But, you know, that's the situation that we've got with young basketball players, is where do you want to go? Do you want to go to college for a year, play in March Madness, become a legend on campus, get an education and maybe come back and get an education? Or do you want to go make money right away overseas, where you're away from your family, you're a kid in a brand new country, you don't know anybody, they're trying to take care of you, but they're only taking care of you because you're a basketball talent. They're not doing it out of any humanitarian, you know, like, "Well, he's 18, he's over here in New Zealand." Or do you want to go to the G League, bounce around a minor league, but make some dough? And I think John Calipari had some good points. All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up next as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call. It is SB Nation Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now. Continues now. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Wednesday hump day edition of the good, the bad, and the dumb. All right, so let's feel good, get the good. What is the good?
Oh, the first good of the day. You know, and this one, we need to, maybe she's an alien. Maybe she was on that UFO that was flying over that the Navy grabbed.
Okay.
But there is a 101-year-old woman alive right now who lives in upstate New York. She was she lived through the 1918 Spanish flu. That's about the time she was born, so she survived that. She survived cancer, and just recently she survived coronavirus.
Let's get her to a lab.
Exactly, right? We need to just duplicate that blood.
She might have super blood, yeah. We might need to take a look at that.
Or maybe she's an alien and that craft was just looking for her. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, she's got a return. She's like, yeah, I've been here long enough.
Yeah, but can you? I mean, she beat corona, she beat cancer, and she lived through the Spanish flu.
I know. Wow. What a life. It's so weird, too, to when you know, every time you see somebody who's like 100, you start thinking about what life was like when they were born.
Right.
And like what they've seen in the last 100 years. Like what? All the technological developments, but you never think about some of the really awful things they might have experienced over the last 100 years. Like the same woman, you know, saw us go to the moon, walk around with computers in our pockets, cars, planes, jet planes, spaceships. But you also realize, yeah, Spanish flu, cancer, coronavirus. Like, yeah, I mean, she's seen some of the worst and survived. Good for her. That is a good story.
It's just amazing. I don't know how. I can't even rationalize it in my head, really.
Yeah.
To do all of that and still be kicking alive. And, you know, there's a photo of her. Says, you know, she's 101 years old and I beat COVID-19. And she's all smiles. You know, wow. I mean, and on top of that, she's 101.
See, that's incredible to me. Because I feel like if I got corona, it would be bad. Like, I would be like, I might not be the one. She got it and was like, nope, listen, I've been here, done. I've got it. I'm good. I'll survive this. I'm 100.
Cancer. I lived through the Spanish flu. I was born during a pandemic.
See, instead of her going, like me going, well, I'm 100, my time has come. She's like, well, I'm not 150. I'm only 101. I can survive this. Good for her.
Yep. That's she awesome. Also, her daughter went on to say that her mother is a survivor.
How old is your daughter? Daughter's going to be 80.
Probably.
Maybe she's 75.
She survived miscarriages, internal bleeding, and cancer.
God. Wow. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's great. Good for her. Good for her. All right, so is there another good?
Well, you know what? I'll throw it out there because I think it's a public service announcement for us.
Sure.
Coors Light is giving away free beer.
Are they really? How?
You nominate someone.
Okay. So I nominate you.
If you nominate me, you go to the website, to their website, and you have to, let me get it here for you so I can accurately tell you that, let's see, right now America could use a beer, hashtag could use a beer. So if you go to that, you can probably find out everything you need to know. Tell us who could use a six pack and why we're buying. So, but I think on top of that, so what you'll do is you'll nominate someone, they'll send you a code. That is redeemable for a six-pack of beer, but I think you have to purchase as well.
Oh, okay. I got you.
So you purchase a six-pack, you get a free six-pack on them.
That makes sense.
And I think it's just a public service announcement that we need to give. They're only doing 500,000 beers. So.
Yeah, how's the beer supply chain working? As it's, you know, I hear stories about, like, farmers have to dump eggs and farmers have to dump potatoes. Is there beer distilleries going,
yes.
Yeah, we gotta dump this.
Yes,
we can't sell it.
I came across this story. This will spill into the bad of the day.
Okay.
Even though there is another bad of the day. You know, this is going to be a weird, because we start off with a high good. Good kind of leading into bad. Bad leading into dumb. Right?
Gotcha.
So the bad of the day is... There's about a million kegs of beer that are about to be tossed.
Wow.
A million kegs of beer that are just, beer companies are looking at it going, can't have skank beer on the market.
That's right.
Because the expiration date is approaching. And, you know, none of these beers were used for some of the parties and festivals and games and tournaments that we all were supposed to be partaking in.
That's right. That's right. So where do they dump it?
I have
just
no idea.
Dump it anywhere?
Norm's house, I would think.
Wow, that's really amazing.
I guess, you know, they just dump it down the sewer. I have no idea. That's a good question.
It's funny. When I was a kid.
My house.
When I was a kid, I would hear stories about the Great Depression. And I would hear stories about how, you know, farmers were dumping gallons and gallons and gallons of milk.
Yeah.
When the nation was starving. I've seen it now. Right.
I saw there was a video news was covering that just showed these farmers just dumping milk right down the drain.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I was like, I would listen to that and I'd go, how could that be? Like, how could that be? And now I'm living in a time where that is exactly what's going on.
Now, I did hear, like, I heard rumors that there might be a meat shortage.
That's what I'm hearing too. I'm hearing that the processing plant can't do it
because they've had coronavirus employees.
Right.
You know.
The guy who's the head of Tyson Foods just did like a whole page thing in the New York Times or something and said, hey, listen, guys, the supply chain is kind of falling apart a bit. Be careful. Like, it's not like eventually you're going to start seeing meat shortages.
Right.
Unless we start doing something.
And then I'll piggyback off that to another bat. Iowa. You need to step your game up, Iowa.
Iowa, okay.
Iowa, because you might be disqualified from unemployment insurance because fear of catching the coronavirus is not a reason to not go back to work.
Oh, okay, because I've been seeing some things on this.
I've seen it other places. I'm just highlighting Iowa because that one seemed – they were really the ones that said, no, if you are able to get a job – or if you were furloughed and your job is offering your position back, fear of catching the coronavirus is not a reason for you to stay on unemployment.
Yeah, that's
and
well.
I wanted to sit there and say, you know what? That I think that is a valid reason.
The only problem with that is you just can't have people just staying away forever.
Well, you can't have a
society where everyone is just going to get paid because they're scared. Because this virus is never going to go away. It's not going to go away.
It's here for at least two more years, kids.
It's here for a while. So you can't just you have to have a workforce. So given the choice, if you give a society a choice to sit around and collect money or work and collect money, you're afraid. Look, there are always going to be people going, look, I'm going to work because I want to work. I don't like sitting around. I don't want to be in my home all day.
Yeah.
I want to do something. So you're always going to have a percentage of the population that will do that anyway. But you can't have a society where people are like, nah, I'm petrified, right? Because the slippery slope is I'm petrified of a car accident. I'm petrified of my hand in the machine. I'm petrified. Like, all of a sudden, those are just as valid. Right. The slippery slope is those fears become just as valid. And then everybody just gets paid for sitting around doing nothing. You do have to reach a point where you say, guys, look, it's not that we're being mean. It's that we can't do this. This is not something we can afford to do. Like it's a fine wish, but we don't have the economic structure to do this. Now, if you get a note from your doctor that says you have you've been diagnosed with some level of anxiety, that might be a circumstance. But you can't have Joe and Martha go, nah, we ain't going to the factory.
No, and I understand this a bit, but maybe there's like a lag time that you
maybe
know it's
so.
Like, hey, you guys, you know, we'll credit you 2 weeks.
I think be a better way to do it.
I think, you know, because for me, you know, I mean, I've been going to work this entire time, so I really don't know any different. But I think there's, you know, with everyone returning back to the workforce, there is kind of like that 2 week period of, okay, let's see what happens in a 2 week period. How many people come down with it? Is the country getting shut down again? Or is the all clear sign, is it valid and let's just get back to it?
I think there's a happy medium there. I think you're right. I think there can be a point where you say, look, we'd love you to go back to the workforce, but we'll extend it to June 15th just to get – because I told them, yeah. I said this last hour, even though it was good to support our local – the restaurant that has been supporting – like my kids' baseball sports teams have been supported by this family
right.
that runs this Mexican restaurant. That's just it's a starlight of our town. We love this place. We went there to support them, but we all felt like we were – it was weird. My wife said it was creepy. I thought it was creepy. Like the servers are in masks, we're far away from each other. It was quiet. Nobody was talking. There was no buzz in the. It felt like, are we doing something wrong?
Right.
Like I felt like I was in a speakeasy. Like I needed a password to get into the restaurant. Hardly anybody was there.
You guys hid underneath the table when you saw a cop roll by.
Right. Yeah.
Go, get out, kids.
All four of us felt like it wasn't what we thought. Like we thought we'd walk in and it would be like. Look, we're all excited to be here. We're happy. You're happy to be open. We're happy to be here contributing. I'm sure everybody, but it wasn't. It was all quiet, subdued, and we all felt like, should we be doing this?
Yeah.
We should have just gotten takeout.
Take it a step further. The other problem is that with that extra $600 bump that the federal government passed, some people are making more money off of that than they are if they went back to work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, where's the motivation to go find a job if sitting on your butt at home gets you paid more?
Oh, sure. So there's a happy medium somewhere. I just don't know where it is, but yeah,
they'll figure it out. Just like everything else they've been doing, just one step at a time.
That's right. All right, the dumb of the day.
You know, we talked about a similar story, and it kind of reared its ugly head again because we had talked about a food delivery service. It was going to be called Boober Eats.
Oh, that's right. We did. Yeah, I remember this.
Well. There's one store one place that's kind of taken it a step further, and it's called Food to Go Go. And this is the Lucky Devil Lounge in, Bend, Oregon? I just want to make sure. It's somewhere in Oregon. And basically, it comes when you're going to pick up food through their drive-thru, which I have questions about that. You will be catered to a show.
Okay.
If you catch my drift.
Is that even legal in Oregon to do those kind of shows?
Apparently it is.
All right.
I mean, it's just, you know, maybe it's just topless. I don't know.
If you told me Vegas, I'd be like, of course.
Yeah.
They were probably doing that before the pandemic.
But, you know, you order food, you order beer, you order some wine, cider or champagne to go with a live DJ and go-go dancers delivered to your car in the parking lot of Lucky Devil Lounge, open Friday and Saturday nights, 6 to 10 p.m.
Does this
raises a lot of different questions.
Does this kill two birds with one stone? A couple of industries married into one?
Maybe. Well, right? I mean, this club is a club.
Okay.
Apparently known for its food, because most of those clubs, you know, they offer you a cheap steak for lunch or free cheeseburger Wednesday for lunch.
Yeah. A lot of it is just a hot plate in the back that they're throwing together just to give you some semblance of a meal.
Sometimes they might have sent Johnny down to McDonald's just to go get a bunch of burgers, unwrap them, and we'll pass them off as our own.
That's right.
Because I don't know too many of those clubs. Where you go for the food.
Yeah. Well done.
So that's the question that I have is because we're being told to, hey, go to this club. You're going to order food to go. And because you're ordering the food, then you get the show. It's probably the other way around, right?
Yeah. Well, to each his own, I guess, in Oregon.
Right? Yeah, it's a progressive state, I guess.
Everybody's trying to put something together that will work.
We'll give it up for innovation.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Wednesday. It is Wake Up Call at SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
By the way, happy anniversary to two things in Major League Baseball from the 80s. I know for some of you that's just going way back too far. But maybe some of you remember these two milestones that happened on this date. 1986, a big one. Roger Clemens striking out 20 batters. Seattle Mariners at Fenway Park in a 3-1 Red Sox victory, breaking the record of Steve Carlton, Nolan Ryan, and Tom Seaver. All of them had 19 strikeouts. Clemens became the first to strike out 20. He did not become the last to strike out 20, as it's been matched by Kerry Wood and Clemens himself again and Max Scherzer. But that night was really when Roger Clemens really hit the national scene. He would start in the All-Star game. I think he went 14-0 to start that season. The Red Sox would go to the World Series, obviously losing to the Mets, if you remember that. But this was a cool game. It was one of those games where I didn't see it live, but I remember watching the replay of it. And I don't watch replay games, but even as a kid, I watched it because it was mesmerizing how many times, you know, to get 20 strikeouts in a game is hard to do, because if guys are just making contact, they're going to fly out, ground out, and then you lose an opportunity. And he was just so dominant, and you didn't realize how dominant he would be in the 1986 season, winning the Cy Young Award. And then also in 1988, the Baltimore Orioles ended a 21-game losing skid. They won their first game of the season, beating the White Sox 9-0. And imagine starting the year 0-21. You want to talk about being out of a playoff race 3 weeks into a season. That was the Baltimore Orioles. 0-21 to start the year back in 1988. And then they, finally got their first one of the year. The next year, they actually did pretty well. But in 88, they were god-awful terrible. So happy anniversary to those two baseball milestones from the 80s. It's Wake Up Call. It's SB Nation Radio.